This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Monday, 6th of September, 2021. We have a U.S. holiday today, Labor Day holiday, a very important demarcation point for sort of ending the summer, getting back into the proper fall season in the U.S., but the rest of the world is certainly not standing still. We have Chinese equities recovering quite smartly overnight, trying to get above that local range high. We had Vice Premier and Chief Economic Advisor to Xi Jinping, Liu He, out overnight talking about the importance of the private sector and its role in the Chinese economy, that there's no change in that, and there will be no change in that. Maybe some sense of reassurance there. But we're also seeing the extension of the very remarkable rally in the hottest market right now, and that is in Japan. We mentioned this on Friday with that resignation of Prime Minister Suga coming up. He will not run for party leader re-election either. There are a couple of characters. I suppose the market is trying to work up a bit of energy around an echo of what we saw back in 2000. And now I'm forgetting if it was the end of 2012, I believe that we saw Abe elected and we saw the actual Kuroda-nomics and Abenomics coming in April 2013, if I'm recalling correctly. But new profiles, Taro Kono, he's not a new profile, but he's a popular figure. Maybe some of these, a new fiscal sense of fiscal impulse, and the Bank of Japan leadership could be set for a shift as well. In any case, the market there, energized, certainly deserves watching. And if you look at slide two, you can see that Nikkei 225 is close to the highest weekly close for the cycle. We haven't really taken out 30,000 on a weekly close there. We're really within a percent or so right now. The actual high is maybe a couple of percent above that. The market wrap for the U.S., pretty quiet market. We're going to talk more about the non-farm payrolls in a moment as a key sort of end to the week, where we saw disappointing payrolls, but there were some little bits and pieces that the market picked up on. The household survey was quite strong. The ISM services, yes, it did fall a bit, but at 61.7, still a very strong reading, suggesting a robust services sector. So I'll tell you, we saw U.S. Treasuries actually coming in for some weakness despite the initial sort of headline disappointment around that non-farm payrolls change number. What's your take on the U.S. Treasury market this week?
Well, John, the reason why we have seen a sell-off in U.S. Treasuries on Friday is because obviously it was driven by inflation and the fact that wages inflation, which is stickier than other types of inflation, has come out much stronger than expected. So basically, we have seen 10-year yields rising around 4 basis points within their monthly standard deviation since the beginning of the year until now. It leaves U.S. Treasuries very vulnerable, and this week we are entering in a week full of supply. From tomorrow, the U.S. Treasury will start off by selling 3 years Treasuries, and then it will follow up on Wednesday and Thursday with 10 and 30 years U.S. Treasuries. I think that at this point, what investors will need to focus on is indirect bidders or foreign demand, because in the past was very strong. If we start to see weakness there, then it could be a sign that we will see more weakness and more bear steepening within the U.S. yield curve. And also, normally the beige book is not as important, but the beige book that is going to be released on Wednesday this week is going to shed some light on inflation, whether it's really transitory or not. So also that report could move U.S. Treasury yields this week.
Yeah. Looking at your slide on your chart there on slide five, I really looked at that 1.4% level. It's quite interesting. But those local pivot highs a little bit below that really, I think, would be a trigger for further downside in bonds, upside in yields. And I like your pulling out the beige book. It could be quite interesting, because this is the chance for the Fed to sort of regional reports from the various Fed regions, what kind of responses they're getting to their surveys of what's going on in the economy. So it could be interesting to get that sense of pressure. We're seeing all kinds of supply side stuff cropping up here. Or we continue to talk about shipping week to week. We've got natural gas, as you pointed out to me earlier this morning, on headlines everywhere. And now we have a very novel new thing going on here. Let's start with this first, even though you've got a last on slide nine. Something that people politically may not be paying attention to much in Africa, a unrest in a small country like Guinea, but this actually has quite important and potential impacts.
It has indeed, John, because we saw, as you can see on slide nine, as John mentioned, we already got aluminium up very strongly. It's reached a 10-year high on LME. It's at a 15-year high in Shanghai. And the news over the weekend was a political attempted coup in Guinea, which is adding to the an already tight supply risk, because the demand is rising for aluminium. It is one of the green metals. We are seeing visible supply deficits already emerging both in China and the rest of the world. And if we now have a supply issue as well, then that adds to the unease. It's not actual aluminium, but it's the raw material bauxite.
Bauxite,
exactly. Bauxite, which is a key component in the production of aluminium. And China imports around half of its bauxite from Guinea, and China is already the world's largest producer of aluminium. So so this is why the market is just taking taking note of this event over the weekend. So far, no news about actual supply disruptions, but it's obviously one that just adds to the ongoing upside potential risk for not only aluminium, but several industrial metals, which we have highlighted recently. And it just looks like something like copper, even though we're still trading sideways, we've had a relatively small correction following a big surge from the lows last March. So it just looks like these markets are just poised to pop eventually.
All right, key story there, and we'll add to a couple other stories in commodities in a moment. Just want to roll back to where we are with a couple of things. First of all, the reaction to the U.S. non-farm payrolls report, where we're seeing the dollar coming sort of back in slightly stronger after sort of weakening to the weakest point in the immediate wake of the release of those payrolls reports. I think that's the U.S. yields coming back a little bit higher. So I think U.S. dollar could be attuned a bit to U.S. yield, especially if this extends a bit more, as Tia indicated, and we don't get a similar or sympathetic move, or if this spooks risk appetite to a degree. I think we look at on slide three, we see the Aussie dollar rally there. It's something I pointed out before. I just want to point out once again, just the momentum shift there has been really remarkable. But I think to get further momentum higher, the really key chart sort of switching or chart reversing area is still not there for Aussie dollar. It's more up in the 75 to 76 range. I marked the old range lows there on that chart on slide three. And we have the 200-day moving average coming in just above 76. We have an RBA meeting up tonight, where I still think the RBA is going to try to maintain as positive a stance as possible. We have the worst sort of impact of COVID lockdowns among developed markets, more or less, in Australia right now. But with a rush to vaccinate and with summer coming up soon in Australia, I suspect the central bank will try to learn the lessons from what we've seen in Europe and the US to a degree and try to look through that. So I think that could add potentially more to the upside, but assuming that risk sentiment remains relatively stable, and we don't get any destabilization there from higher U.S. yields. And speaking of risk sentiment, where we are, just want to roll to slide four, where I've got the latest on the Saxo Global Risk Indicator showing we're at local new highs, just stunning degrees of complacency and risk on in all of our metrics, from very low volatility to credit spreads compressing again, both for emerging markets. We're seeing strong emerging market currencies around the shop, and in corporate credit. So we are very concerned. We're concerned about the extent of this risk on rally, particularly in U.S. equities. We've expressed that. We think we're inside the window of sort of the final phase for now of a sort of melt-up scenario. But timing and catalyst in terms of what could provide a headwind for this is the key and critical unknown here. And then on Eurodollar, the key this week is not only those U.S. auctions and U.S. yields, but also the ECB, where they have they're at an awkward sort of pivot point in coming meetings, as they need to signal some forward guidance on what to do about these tapering plans for next March. They've extended the PEP purchases out to next March. How do they deal with that signaling? How do they deal with that switch? I'll tell you, any thoughts on that, on ECB this week in terms of fixed income at least?
Well, John, a lot of market participants are expecting a dovish taper from the ECB this Thursday. I honestly believe that that's very unlikely. You see, in summer, Just a few months ago, like a few weeks ago, actually, the ECB adopted the symmetric inflation target, which enables it to be more accommodative for long inflation, basically surprising on the upside or on the downside. So I believe that in this case, the ECB will let things run as they are. And definitely, it's never the case for the ECB to move before the Federal Reserve. So it will be a very odd move, which I don't believe that it's in the cards. But what that means for yields, because we have seen bond yields last week rising from minus 0.42% to basically minus 0.36% in just a week. The rise was quite considerable, and it was also caused by a series of hawkish signals sent by hawkish members of the ECB. The thing is that here, John, is that bond yields are destined to rise, and the closer we get to the German election, probably the more weakness we will see within bonds. That will provoke higher yields. Of course, if we see a dovish taper, it will help yields to rise. But in the meantime, if the ECB disappoints the market this week and keeps its dovish message, we could see basically 10 years of bond yields are trading range bound. Very important, before the ECB meeting on Thursday, on Wednesday, Germany is going to sell 10 years bonds, and it will be very important to see how people position before that event.
Yeah, and then that German election, like you point out, is so critical. We'll be talking plenty more about that this week. We have the SPD pulling up well clear now of the CDU-CSU bloc, consistently in polls by several percentage points. So we'll have to watch that closely. Also interesting, for once in a while, and quite some time, Ole, is this jump in silver we saw that you're highlighting in the silver to gold ratio on slide 7. Take us through what the market is thinking. And also, I just would note that interesting to see gold popping on Friday, despite U.S. yields doing a similar.
Yeah, the precious metal market generally responded quite favorable to that weaker than expected job report. But as we see, the impact was strongest in silver. We did highlight on a couple of cases last week how that the gold-silver ratio was playing a key part in the relationship between the two. Well, it obviously is. And how that 75 level had become a key level of support. When we when the number came out on Friday, that ratio gave way, and we dropped below 75. And with gold still stuck at 80, just below 1835 again this morning, silver was allowed to run amok, and that basically means that ratio has come down quite a bit. We now got silver trading above the previous resistance, now support at 24.5. But in order for gold really to shine as well, we need that 1835 level taken out. And again, the market this week will continue to watch both what Altea has been talking about on the yields and also on the dollar. So these will be the two of the main catalysts. But we are generally seeing renewed input price rises through the commodities, and that may also actually add some supporting And we did mention natural gas further before. I think it cannot be reiterated how incredible this current rally is that we're seeing in energy prices. Both gas prices are now at record highs in Europe. They are getting close to record highs in Asia. We got the same time, and it is lack of supplies in the global system. High demand in Asia, high demand in Europe, not enough supply coming from a place like Russia. That's driving up coal prices, it's driving up emissions prices, and the end result is higher utility prices, higher power prices for consumers around the world. Here in Europe, we're seeing industry seeing their electricity bills rise by a factor 2 to 3. And it is something that will eventually reach the political stage where politicians will have to take note. And the question is how this whole transformation, green transformation, will be impacted by that. We've got a German election coming up soon, as mentioned, and what's also unusual is that this gas rally is happening at a time where we're still not even out of the summer period yet. The real demand season only really kicks off in a month's time. So that's really when it starts to get critical. So it's one we definitely need to keep an eye on into the autumn months.
All right, a really important rundown there on this, again, these supply side constraints. It also feeds directly into this whole area, into this green transformation, which is not going to happen if gas prices continue rising at this pace, and those metals prices as well. Let's very briefly on earnings. You can see the overview this week on slide 10. I won't pull anything out there. We have Peter Garnery, hopefully our equity strategist and quant strategist out or with us tomorrow. I just put a Lululemon chart on slide 10 there on the overview, pointing out that it's one of these pandemic stocks that did well. We hit new all-time highs in recent weeks, but I'm sure it'll be very key, that guidance this week. And then just a small note, this New Oriental Education, one of these education stocks that got completely gutted by the Chinese push against private companies offering online or offering education services, essentially down around 90% from the highs. Hard to see what investors are supposed to get from that call. Brief roundup of the macro this week. You can see the overview on slide 11. Again, U.S. markets closed today. We have the Australian Central Bank up tonight. Looking for that, I think they'll be optimistic and want to look through things. I think the more important thing will be the backdrop here for the Australian dollar. Pretty busy week on the central bank front. We have the Bank of Canada up on Wednesday. I think a more cautious tone there. There's also the political season ahead of the September 20th election. And those U.S. auctions will be also very much in focus. ECB meeting on Thursday and another Russian rate hike set likely for Friday, another 50 basis points there. Look for the Chinese trade data up overnight as well. Despite a fairly quiet U.S. calendar, the Fed Beige Book aside, this is going to be an interesting week macro-wise as we transition into fully out of the summer months. For today, that's a wrap. We'll be back tomorrow with the Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.